And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. It is Friday, August 19th. Al Melchior here with Eno Saris, and you are not getting the usual dulcet tones of Derek Van Riper. He will be back in his accustomed spot on this show next week, also with the live stream, which we're not doing this week. But Eno and I are here to discuss your waiver options for this coming weekend. So, Eno, if you're ready, we'll just dig right in. We've got one really big prospect call up to talk about and another one that I think we can start to anticipate. So let's actually start with the one that I think we can anticipate. Corbin Carroll, he's certainly been talked about before on this show and a lot on the prospect show on Tuesdays, but there was a report from Nick Pecoro in the Arizona Republic that came out on Thursday stating that Mike Hazen, the GM of the Diamondbacks, says that he wants Carroll up with the big league club this season. So do you think now is the time to try to add Carroll? And should we be doing this in all leagues, regardless of size?
Yes, I'm excited about this guy. I think he's either the best or the second best prospect in baseball on my list, which doesn't exist, but there's an informal list in my head. I would just say that, you know, for example, Francisco Alvarez is in AAA. He's really young. He's a catcher, though, and the prospect list that you look at will often give catchers and shortstops more value because they're for real life, and this is a fantasy show. And so, you know, the value that Gunnar Henderson can give with his glove and the value that Francisco Alvarez can give from his position, not so super useful for all of us unless we're in two catcher or 30-team dynasty leagues that need a shortstop. But in any case, given those things, Carroll is my favorite prospect in the minors because he gives you contact, he gives you patience, he gives you speed, and there's so many people looking for stolen bases right now. And he also gives you power. And given his set, I feel like he'll do well when he lands, in Arizona. So I'd rather have him on my team than on somebody else's.
Yeah, as would I. And there have been a good number of people who have gone ahead and taken the initiative, picked him up earlier this season. And I'm not just talking about dynasty leagues or really deep leagues. That roster rate is creeping up. But I still think for somebody who is now reportedly maybe not imminently going to be called up, but should be called up maybe within the next couple of weeks. I think that number is going to rise very quickly. So I agree. There's definitely some urgency to trying to add Carroll this weekend. And before we get on to some of the bigger names who were called up in the past week, I want to talk about somebody since just we're on the Diamondbacks. Talk about Stone Garrett, which is not somebody I would have guessed would be near the top of the show. Just even going back a few weeks, I figured maybe we'd see Dominic Fletcher before we'd see Garrett, much less Corbin Carroll. But Garrett has had a second really good season in the minors, very old for the levels. He was in AA last year, former Marlins prospect who was let go, picked up as a free agent before 2021 by the Diamondbacks, and really did everything just as well in AAA this year as he did last year in AA. A little bit of a power speed combo for Garrett as well. So getting some playing time right now, do you see that lasting, especially if Carroll is on the way?
Yeah, it gets a little bit crowded there. And, you know, there's some arbitrage opportunity because, again, the real-life prospect lists care a lot about his long-term viability. And so they'll care that he is old for his levels, as you mentioned. So they'll care that, he was good in those levels, but only about 10% better than league average. When you get to kind of placing this team on the diamond, though, it does get a little tricky, because if Corbin Carroll is up, you've got Varsho, you've got Thomas, you've got Jake McCarthy, and you got Stone Garrett. And you got Carroll. That's, I think, five for four positions. Eh, that's doable, I guess. You just play Ketel Marte more at second and DH, I guess. And you just rotate them through and play some. It does mean that all of them get a little devalued, right? Because you're just not going to get that juicy starts every day, plays every day kind of playing time from any of them if they're all up. I would say that if anybody falls back, it's going to be Stone Garrett because he's had a long documented history with contact issues. And even in the big leagues so far, he's whiffed a fifth of the time. And in the minor leagues, he had really high whiff rates. So if he starts striking out 30% of the time, it'll become some sort of platoon possibly with Jake McCarthy, where Jake McCarthy is the left side and Stone Garrett is the right side. So definitely the riskiest profile in that entire outfield, because Alec Thomas can really play center field defense. And even if his bat isn't exactly where I think it'll be eventually, I think it's a better bat and a better piece for their future than Stone Garrett.
So clearly there's, in the short term, some NL-only appeal here for Garrett. Just, you know, it's the lowest bar possible because those of us who have mono league teams.
Just want someone who might play.
Yeah, exactly. And he's doing that so far. Seems like he should for the near-term future. Is this somebody you think, just again, because of the power speed profile that he's shown the last couple of seasons, that it's worth maybe just putting a nominal bid on him in a 15-team league?
I think picking up Stone Garrett is fading Corbin Carroll and saying, oh, I'm going to get 2 weeks before Corbin Carroll even comes up, I think. And so I would do a make good bid on him. I would put a dollar or two on him. But I think going heavy in on him with the Corbin Carroll news is probably short-sighted.
All right. Well, I would definitely agree with that. But, you know, just an intriguing player in an intriguing situation, at least for the next few weeks.
Super hot to begin. I think that, you know, he's aggressive and he's in his peak season, right? He's 26 years old. He's an aggressive hitter and he's at his best. So, you know, that's why he comes to the big leagues and he's ready. But that doesn't mean that he's a better long-term asset for the Diamondbacks, and it doesn't mean that he's going to play over anybody, I would say, other than Jake McCarthy.
All right. Well, yeah, it's something to watch if you've got McCarthy, which I do, by the way. So let's get to some players that I think have stirred up a lot more excitement this past week. Brent Beatty is a really, really interesting one. I mean, not just because he's a top prospect, but there's been kind of a whole almost soap opera this week when
he's not coming up.
Yeah, the Luis Guillorme went on the IL. I think it was back on Monday. It seems like weeks ago. And there was a source saying that they weren't going to call Beatty up at all this year. And DVR and I talked about this on the Tuesday episode. I'm feeling a little bit smart because I said I'm a little skeptical of that. And then the Mets maybe look a little bit smart on Wednesday when they actually did call him up because Eduardo Escobar then went on the IL. So I think regardless of whenever either of those third basemen come back, the job has to be Beatty's, because now that he's up, I don't see him like not just hitting his way into this lineup game after game.
Yeah, I mean, the opportunity is there because I think Escobar and McNeil have enough defensive versatility that they can play other places. They can platoon. They can help with the depth. They can play in the outfield. McNeil, for one, can play in the outfield. Escobar can play second. So right there you have some pieces you can move around. I think he'll do it. There's always that risk, you know, in a long-term league, you don't care about that risk because you're like, oh, I've got him for next year. I'm not depending on him for now. But if you're like trying to win a league that's just this year, you're in a redraft league, it's kind of one of those home run swings where you're going for it. If you're going to put Beatty in there and you're, especially if you're dropping somebody else, There is the chance. I think there still is the chance that Beatty like plays okay, but Escobar comes back and they try to put all their guys out there and they put their veterans out there and Beatty goes back down. I mean, you have to. What percentage would you put on that?
I was being so optimistic before. I think I would put that at like 40-50%.
Yeah, right. It's almost a coin flip.
I'm hedging a little bit towards the let Beatty play side, but yeah, I could see it.
It's interesting that the only thing that he really struggled with coming up was he hit too many grounders for a long time. And I asked him about it at the Futures game, and he was like, I don't really track that. I'm just trying to hit the ball hard. And yet this year, the big advancement for him, at least in Double A, was the lowest ground ball rate of his career. And correspondingly, the best power numbers of his career. So he gets up to the big leagues, and 8 of his first 10 balls in play are grounders. So I don't know what that means. It's not even 8 of 10. It's less than that.
Yeah, I'm going to go with small sample.
Yeah,
and continue to be optimistic here. Although one of those batted balls in his very first plate appearance was a home run.
That was awesome. What a way to start.
And, you know, you were the first person, I think, to impress upon me the utility of max exit velocity as an indicator.
And he hit one.
And so that shot placed him in the top 10% of all major leaguers who have had a plate appearance this year or who have had a batted ball this year, which I think is just spectacular. I don't know if it means anything at all. Can we take anything away from that?
Well, you can look at something like at Fangraphs. They have a 70 raw power on him. That's the 20-80 scouting scale. That means it's elite raw power. They give him game power of 45-60, which I think describes his career perfectly. I'm saying that I want to hit the ball hard. He hits the ball hard. We know he hits the ball hard. He has this raw power. But the question about the shape of his career will be how much he taps into that raw power. We've seen the reason why some people say max exit velocity isn't useful is because there are players that have high max exit velos that don't turn it into game power. We're watching Cabrian Hayes right now to see what happens with him. But generally, I like it because it tells us something about the ceiling. So the ceiling for Brett Beatty is a 30 home run hitter because he can hit the ball 113. And there's some work by Rob Arthur that says that any ball over 108 changes your OPS projection. So it's meaningful no matter what. And I think it describes his upside.
Yeah, very cool. And also very cool to point out that, the launch angle is going to be critical for him. So if he can just translate what he did in Double A this year that he hadn't done previously in terms of hitting some fly balls, that's going to make a big difference. Well, let's go over to the Bronx, look at a couple of players that the Yankees called up this week. Esteban Florial. Now, this is not a major league debut like it was for Beatty, but could potentially be really impactful with Florial coming in, 14 home runs, 32 stolen bases. It's Grant Wilkes-Barre this year. So again, another player with power speed potential. But in the waiver column that I just filed right before recording this show, I went a little bit easy on the bid recommendation for Florial because Giancarlo Stanton is probably going to be back in a matter of days, just a few days. And I'm just not sure if that means that Aaron Judge goes back into center field. I'm not sure where the playing time comes for Florial. And best case scenario is maybe he plays pretty regularly, but then you got Harrison Bader coming back in September. So how much do you think that should dampen our enthusiasm when we're figuring out bids this weekend?
Well, if we're all going to be dampening enthusiasm, let me just throw in his strikeout rate, which is really high.
Yeah, that too.
He had a 31% strikeout rate in AAA, and you wouldn't expect him to do better than that in the major leagues. And if he does much worse than that, then he's almost definitely going to have a very low batting average and may not make it as a major leaguer. I think for me, right around 30% is the line. And so I'm not super excited about his prospects. Also at 24, he's not necessarily young for his level anymore. He's had some batted ball events in the major leagues and has not had that sort of 113 for us yet. So I'm not super excited about, not that excited about Oswaldo Cabrera, the other call up there, even though Oswaldo Cabrera probably has a slightly better chance at playing time because he only has to beat out one player. As you mentioned, Florial has to beat out potentially Judge, Stanton, and Bader and Hicks, I guess, to get his playing time. It's way more crowded for him. Oswaldo Cabrera just has to beat out IKF, and it's possible, but he also has a 26% strikeout rate. And, you know, when a player has like really, really low isolated slugging percentages and speed, and then has like a 200 isolated slugging in the minors, I don't always believe the power until I start seeing some barrels at the major league level. You know what I mean? Because I've seen plenty of fast players in the minors turn singles into doubles just by being aggressive, just by, you know, running hard on a single and then, you know, being fast enough that they can turn it into a double. And you do that enough times and all of a sudden your isolated slugging looks good, but you still only have 8 homers, you know? So I see him as fairly punchless in terms of power, good speed, won't make as much contact as Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. So why would he necessarily be better than IKF?
All right. Well, I don't know. I don't know. But here's the argument I tried to make in the waiver column. And actually, I'm going to add an element to this argument that I didn't make in the column, which is that I have this recollection. This is probably just very selective memory on my part, you know, but that some of the, you know, better power hitting Yankees prospects to come along in recent years didn't hit for that much power in their minor league system, particularly at Scranton. And Aaron Judge, for example. Now, I'm not going to make the argument that Cabrera is Aaron Judge. But Aaron Judge didn't put up the greatest power numbers in the minors. But, of course, all the scouting reports indicated he was going to hit for huge power in the majors. And, of course, he has. But Cabrera, from all indications, he doesn't have that much raw power. But he does hit a lot of fly balls. And it just seems like that could play pretty well
Stadium. That's an interesting thing. And the other thing I guess I just noticed is a switch hitter. So may fit into the lineup better. That's interesting.
Yeah, there's that. So I think it's just a question too of what these, you know, organizational philosophy kind of things, that do the Yankees want to keep Kiner-Falefa in the lineup because, you know, he is that bat in the lineup that's going to make a lot of contact. It's not necessarily going to be very hard contact, but, you know, he'll give him that. He'll give him, you know, some good defense. Or are they just going to say, you know, we've really been struggling, let's just load up with as many potential power bats as we can?
Yeah. And unfortunately, the way that I could see it going is they give him a few starts this weekend, and those are pretty meaningful starts, right? For his future and for whether or not they believe in Stickham. And if those starts go really well, then his price goes up really hard. So if you're in a daily league and you have a spot that you're kind of just prospecting, you're just trying things out, then I would put Florial above Garrett. You know, I don't know if I'd put him above Beatty, but I would take a chance on him. But if the weekend goes really good, it could just be 2 or 3 games and, you know, Judge comes back or somebody comes back and Stanton comes back and he's back down, you know, or whatever it is. Yeah. So I tend to be more cautious, as you can tell, on most of these guys.
Yeah, well, I think that's warranted. We as a community get very overheated about prospect call-ups. So I think that's a good, you know, it's kind of good to put the brakes on that sometime, especially when you have reason to, when you see a situation like this where the roster is just so crowded and it's kind of hard to see the path towards a more consistent role.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I want to talk about a couple of Phillies to target this week. Both of these players are really pretty broadly available. I really like the Philly schedule this week. It's all home games, a 7-game schedule, 4 against the Reds, 3 against the Pirates. No matchups, no pitcher matchups in those schedules. That's really going to scare you as a fantasy manager. So Derek Hall, who is actually on both the CBS most drop list and the ESPN most drop list right now, and he is in a little bit of a funk, 5 for 25, although one of those 5 hits is a home run, but he's striking out a lot, doesn't walk, but he does have this great schedule. And so what do you think about if you're needing a first base upgrade or first base replacement? Who interests you more, Hall or somebody who's on the most added list in Joey Meneses?
You know, that Nationals Park is a little bit underrated when it comes to helping homers leave the park. And I really like that Meneses is not striking out. I don't like that he's 30. But if you look, it's pretty clear that he just didn't have the power to go along with his position for a long time, and that he's really tapped into something in the last 3 years, 4 years in the minor leagues. You know, a guy who's striking out 14% of the time with a 7% swing strike rate, who's in a park that's only slightly worse than the one Derek Hall's playing in. I don't know. I might take Meneses, man. I like what Hall's doing, but do you know when Harper's back?
I think it's a couple of weeks at the earliest. Okay. So that's a good thing that you brought up, because in bringing up this week's schedule, I did frame this as kind of just a 1-week streamer thing. But if you have a longer term need, that could really be a tiebreaker.
Yeah. And all the he has not hit the ball 113 like Beatty, but he is barreling the ball. And, you know, put alongside the power expansion after he got to Boston in the minor leagues, I just there's something I like about Meneses' line that there's a little whiff of Schwindel about it, and that's bad news, you know, going forward. But Schwindel in his first year was definitely useful. And
I'm hearing a little bit of an echo of what you were saying about Stone Garrett, that, you know, guy very, very old for the levels, but maybe because of that experience, he's more poised to help us in the short run.
Yeah. Like, definitely not a dynasty asset, not a big dynasty pickup, a 30-year-old first baseman for the Nationals. But somebody that could just help in the short run. And when I'm looking for a short run stats and short run players like this, I can take the age off. I that's not as important. Short run, I want to know how much contact does he make and how powerful is that contact. That's pretty much it, right? I mean, I think even things like plate discipline can go out in the short run, because you just want him to make contact and do it powerfully.
Well, if you need homers, just again for this week, maybe just for a short-term streamer, maybe it's even just for your utility slot, Hall does have a really nice set of matchups. And, you know, in terms of this comparison too, I mean, they're hitting with pretty equivalent power when you look at exit velocity on flies and liners. They're both like right around 96 miles an hour, which is really, really good. Uh-huh. Except Meneses is doing it, like you said, with more frequent contact. So
I think you might, you could also place them as in a little bit of a comparable spot and then just sort of stream them. You know, if Philly's home for 7 next week?
Yes.
Yeah, well, that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, I mean, they're great matchups. It really stands out this weekend's schedule.
maybe pick up Joey Meneses the week after that.
Yeah, that's a plan. That's a plan there. And so while we're on the Phillies, now this is not somebody, again, that you're going to be picking up if you have power needs, but Bryson Stott, when you look up and down that lineup, he, to me, kind of strikes that sweet spot of he's available in enough leagues and actually has a chance to contribute. So what do you think about him for this week, given the schedule and farther ahead?
He has made maybe the biggest turnaround from the beginning of the season to now in terms of his chase rate. He was chasing at pitches outside the zone above 40% of the time when he first started. That was part-time work, and he wasn't really a starter. As soon as he started playing more often, he dropped all the way down to around 25%. Now, it is interesting, the chase rate's back up again in the last 10 games, 20 games. So I don't know what that means, that now there's kind of, they're trying to figure him out. But generally, I like that his plate discipline has gotten better over the course of the season. I like that he has some speed. I like that he'll run into the occasional homer at home. I like his eligibilities. And I've had him on some NFBC teams as basically an MI backup that has played sometimes when guys get hurt, or played on a Friday schedule when he has three games, the other guy has two, or the other guy's, you know, in a bad park and he's in a good park. So I like him as a good bench bat, basically. That's how I see him.
Yeah, that fits. And you're talking, what, 15-team leagues then?
I mean, Bryson Stott, I would make Bryson Stott a bench bat in 15-team leagues. Obviously, I think in NL only, he's probably already gone.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know that I want, unless I just had an injury and he's replacing, I don't know that I want to depend on him week in and week out.
All right, fair enough. And I think, yeah, that's a fair assessment. And again, he's got the schedule in his favor this week. So if you've got a roster, where you've got, actually, I'll use my own roster from TGFBI, where I do have Stott and I also have Adam Frazier. This would be a week where I would give the nod to Stott for sure, because of the schedule. Although, as I say that, let's go on to a couple Mariners, because actually they do have a pretty nice schedule this week. And regardless of schedule, I am just amazed every week when I'm putting together the waiver column list, that Cal Raleigh's roster rates are still way lower than it seems like they should be. He's still available in about 2/3 of all the leagues on CBS, where roster rates tend to be a little bit higher than on the other sites. And he just keeps hitting for power. And since June 1st, he's hitting .232, which is not great. But when you look at the catcher position, there's not that many options for batting average, and he's given you as much power as, you know, just about anybody.
I've been really impressed by him. I picked him up in Auto New as a catcher that I think I may end up cutting Yasmani Grandal this offseason, you know, and keeping Cal Raleigh. Grandal has looked old, and Raleigh, I wish he had a little bit more plate discipline. I wish he walked a little bit more. I wish he didn't strike out as much, but at least when he hits the ball, he hits it wicked hard. I mean, 114 max EV, 14% barrel rate. It's what you want out of a catcher if you can't have a really great one, just one that at least hits you, pop you some homers.
Yeah, and he has been doing that. And that schedule, by the way, they are all home games, which maybe for the Mariners is not ideal, but they start off with a couple of games against the Nationals, a four-game set against Cleveland, you know, sort of a mixed bag there in terms of the starters. We're actually going to talk about one of those starters that the Mariners are going to face this week a little bit later on. But before we move on, let's talk about Sam Haggerty. He has continued to play pretty regularly, even with the return of Julio Rodriguez. He started 12 of the Mariners' last 14 games. During that stretch, he's hit .317 with a homer and three steals, which pretty much matches up with what he's done on the season, a .310 average, four homers, and eight stolen bases on the year. Do you think this playing time is going to last? And if it does, where should he be added?
I don't know. This has gone under the radar for me because he strikes out too much. I've sort of sorted him, you know, like he's come up a couple times and struck out a bunch and didn't, you know, play that well. And I've sorted him as a kind of a backup, fourth outfielder type. I still think he kind of is that because all the projections say he's going to fall back to below average work with the bat. If you look at, you know, even some traditional things like batting average on balls in play, he's near .400. You know, he strikes out 25% of the time, has a .310 average. That's not usually something you see together. None of his batted ball stats are that exciting. Who is he playing over? I don't even really understand it because the outfield goes Julio, Haniger. So he must be playing the other outfield spot that Kyle Lewis was going to play some of.
Yeah, so it's Kyle Lewis, Kelnick getting sent down when Rodriguez came up. I think that was really
Winker, though.
kind of the key thing. Winker's, you know, kind of toggling between outfield and DH. And so the other player I was going to get to that I think is
not playing
is exactly. He's the other one who's, and you can see that continuing on. You can see Santana sitting so that Haggerty can play some outfield.
I mean, yeah, between the two of them, I guess I would still say Santana has the better projections, but I guess, you know, Santana, you know, they're both switch hitters, and Santana's projected for better, but Santana's hitting worse now and offers less defensive value. So if you're putting your best defensive team out there, then Winker's at DH, Santana's on the bench, and Haggerty's out there. So I guess it might continue. I'm just not that excited about the bat, and I would say it's for 15-teamers who are desperate for steals. He could be a guy that you put at the bottom. I like to do chains. Again, I know this is NFBC, but like you can also think about it non-NFBC, where you're like, if your waivers run nightly or weekly, you know, put him at the bottom for a dollar, or put them at the bottom of your waiver claim list, so that if you are looking for steals, it goes, you know, Corbin Carroll, Florial, Stott, and then ends with Haggerty. You know, just so you, it's like a kind of a make good thing. If you miss out on all the other guys, you get Haggerty for a buck. Maybe you get a couple stolen bases before something else changes on that roster.
That is very good and very specific advice. Because yeah, that kind of process really matters on Sunday night. You know, that contingency order, it matters. So I like that a lot. I would just add one thing, because I agree with everything that you said. I mean, there's very little raw power there. I have thought of him as a fourth outfielder because that's what he has been, and he's gotten sent down, and he's never had this extended time.
There's a lot of
orgs.
You can
barely call it extended because it's been just a couple of weeks. But the one thing is, you know, that 310 average, there's clearly going to be some regression there, but he does seem to be pretty consistently predisposed to hitting line drives, and I think that, you know, he could be like a guy who hits 280 the rest of the way with some steals, and that's useful. But I think how you've couched it in terms of at the bottom of the chain, that's probably the right approach with Haggerty. Let's just talk about one other hitter, and that is Christian Arroyo. And I'm just going to be really honest here. I live in Massachusetts, so I watch the Red Sox more than any other team. And Arroyo's been playing a lot, but he's still just fantasy-wise really been under my radar. And on one of the broadcasts this week, they were really kind of going on about how well he was hitting the ball. And so I was surprised to confirm that on StatCast and see that, yeah, he's averaging 95.5 miles an hour, an exit velocity on flies and liners. He's hitting 365 since the All-Star break. That's not with really very much in-game power, but there's playing time. There is batting average. There's maybe the potential for a little bit more power. How interested are you in Christian Arroyo?
I've been watching him in the box scores. And I really wanted to see what happened when Kike Hernandez came back, right? And it looks like he's still playing. It looks like Duran is the one sitting.
Yeah.
Which is he going to go down, or has he gone down?
Not yet. He hasn't. I wouldn't be surprised if he did.
And it seems fairly resilient. If you have to make your decision Sunday, then the next few days will be pretty meaningful, because Kike is back like 2 or 3 days, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, if you can wait, then happily wait, because the next 3 days, if he starts three times, then Duran's going down. that's really the it's not that they play the same position. It's just that Kike plays both of the positions. And if,
right.
You know, and Kike's probably just going to play. And if he's just going to play and he's playing in center field and Arroyo's playing at center, then they'd rather just have a defensive minded center fielder lying around as the fourth outfielder, maybe, so that Duran has some things to work on.
Yeah, for sure. And as far as Arroyo's concerned, we also have to keep an eye on when Trevor Story comes back, because that probably would mean the end of regular playing time for him, I would assume. But again, it's a short-term play.
I think I see a guy who's just at his peak. You know?
Yeah.
If you just look across everything. He's chasing less than he's been chasing in the last 3 years. He's making more contact than he's made in the last 3 years. His strikeout rate is the best it's been in the last 3 years. His barrel rate is almost the best it's been in the last 3 years. His max EV, you know, he's peaking. It's a little bit of a backhanded compliment to say someone who's 7% better than league average is peaking, but you can take advantage of that too.
Yeah, exactly. Like I said, I wasn't really expecting to find the things they were saying on the broadcast confirmed by the stats. So there is something to what's going on. It just, like you said, may not last for very long, but it's relevant for us in the short term. All right, well, let's take a look at some starting pitchers, and we will start with Dustin May, who's pretty sure been discussed on this show, on this particular episode of the show in recent weeks. He will be returning this Saturday against the Marlins at home. That lines him up to face them again next weekend in Miami. So not that I think that matchups are necessarily anything that's super relevant for Dustin May. And he is widely rostered already. But now that he's back and he's not universally rostered, should he be?
Yeah, 100%. He's got to be. He almost broke my stuff model in the minor leagues. I have a minor league stuff model, and he was number one, in the PCL. So I think he's going to go absolutely back to the version of Dustin May that was striking people out and not the one that came before that. Because if you think about it, he's had a long time to be working on the shapes of those pitches. And, you know, those shapes that he had that where he was so successful, they're still there. So. I'm 100% in. I know he didn't have great fastball command, and you don't normally have that coming back, but especially given these matchups that he's starting with, like he jumps into, he's to me almost matchup independent.
All right. If you have any doubt, yes, he starts with two very, very favorable matchups right now. Well, that was maybe a little bit of a softball, but I'm less sure about Mike Soroka. He is on the most added list, so it's not news to very many people, if anyone at all, that he's on his way back soon, could be back in early September. What is your anticipation there? Do you think that the Braves go six-man? Do you think Jake Odorizzi is just keeping the seat warm for Soroka, or do you see maybe a different role for him? And are you even interested in him for the last few weeks of the season?
Yeah, I am. It's a complicated
situation.
No, I like him. In fact, a major league player once texted me from camp when nobody knew who Soroka was, and he was like, "This kid, Soroka, you gotta watch him." I'm just nervous about that whole situation. If I was running their team, what I would do is basically have almost like a six or seven man situation where, like, I just want to have a bunch of guys with bulk behind my aces. Because what I've seen in the postseason is you might take your starting pitcher out in the second or third. We're getting that aggressive with taking pitchers out. And if you need to take your guy out in the second or third, you need to have a couple of guys who can go two or three that are ready to go behind them. And so I would be almost have like my ace, maybe my number two, and then the other two spots in the postseason rotation are piggybacks. And if that's the case, then I want Strider pitching three or four innings and Soroka pitching three or four innings and Odorizzi pitching three or four innings. And that's awful for every fantasy owner.
Yeah. So you're talking about that like in September and not October. You're saying that could be a nightmare.
It's sort of like how I would prepare for it, right? Because how do you keep Odorizzi as a bulk option? You have to keep him stretched out. So you have to pitch him at least two or three innings. And to get the best value out of a guy who you're pitching two or three innings, you almost need to piggyback them, because if you're just using them in mop-up situations, you can't plan that, right? You can't keep him on a schedule in mop-up situations. So the only other option is that they don't care about Odorizzi. Odorizzi was just a get-us-there guy, and Soroka replaces him, and Odorizzi basically just turns to mop-up guy. That's a possibility. I would say that's basically the 50-50 possibility. But the 50 where it's a six man is not good for anybody, or piggybacks. That's really bad for everybody, including Soroka owners.
Yeah, yeah. So, you are saying there's a chance that there's a better scenario, but
because Odorizzi's not that good.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a good caution, to put out there if you're thinking about speculating on Soroka, because again, he's on the most out of the list. You're having some company if you're ready to do that.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Let's take a look at some streaming options for the week. Maybe there's more than just stream appeal here. In fact, I think that may be the case with Michael Wacha, who just made his return this past weekend against the Yankees, had arguably his best start of the season, and just got a bunch of whiffs. I think it was 18 was the total out of 89 pitches. A bunch on, I think it was the cutter. And I don't know, what do you make of that? Is that the velocity was up, particularly on the cutter? Do you think there's something different about post-IL Michael Wacha? Is it an outlier? Don't know, and just play it cautious?
It was indistinguishable in the model by stuff. His stuff was indistinguishable from his other starts by Stuff Plus. I think he's a very frustrating player, and I mostly just stay away because, yes, he has great starts. I think it's the starts where he has really good command, and he keeps them. He pitches. He throws all three pitches, and it really mixes them up well. But at his heart, he's a fastball changeup guy, which is frustrating. That doesn't always lead to K's. And there are matchups where he just gets destroyed. And I just feel like rostering him is you just don't know what's coming. You know, going to Tampa Bay seems like a good matchup. Well, Tampa Bay had him. Maybe they just know exactly what he's going to do, and maybe they whoop him. I mean, that's totally possible.
I had not considered that angle. That's a good reason to be a little more cautious than maybe I was recommending in the column. So
I like the next guy on our list, maybe the most out of the next group of names. You mind if I jump ahead? Ross Stripling.
Yeah, go right ahead.
I like Ross Stripling a lot. He was one of the bigger stuff improvers over the course of the season. He's changed. He has a new changeup. And he's also showing his better command. So he's truly kind of one of these four-pitch guys that I think can suppress the really bad outings by, you know, mixing it up and showing that good command and keeping batters guessing, at least on terms of pitch type. Michael Wacha to me is kind of at his heart a two-pitch guy, and two-pitch guys sometimes just get blown up. I think four-pitch guys, you know, maybe they don't have the same ceiling sometimes because I don't think, you know, maybe Wacha's changeup is probably better than Stripling's, maybe. You know, maybe Stripling's fastball is not as good, but he has four and he really mixes it up. So I don't love that at Boston setup there, but Stripling has survived some pretty decent matchups recently. And I'm believing in him.
Yeah, well, to do as well as he's done in the AL East this year, he's definitely had to handle some good lineups. Let's go with a couple of Cubs. And by the way, just yeah, to go back to Stripling for 1 second, you mentioned at Boston, he finishes up with at home against the Angels. The Cubs this week, they've got a series with the Cardinals and then a road series at Milwaukee. So I don't love that two-step at all.
No.
But you got a couple pitchers who benefit from it with the two starts who have pitched very well lately, Justin Steele and Drew Smyly. What's your level of trust, and do you prefer one over the other?
I'll take Steele. Smiley's a really weird look for people because he's a extremely over-the-top lefty that doesn't have any wiggle, really. But I think sometimes people square it up, and the model isn't that big of a fan of his. The model also doesn't love Steele, but the difference is the last few starts, he has been improving. They've been his best starts. The last three starts have been his best three-start stretch of the year in terms of combining command and stuff. And then there's also just he throws this cut-ride four-seam that is unique-ish, or it's rare, and it's possible my model doesn't know everything about that yet, and it's something that the Cubs are buying into. So there's just enough there. There's intrigue, a new kind of pitch, new type of fastball, and also peaking in the model at the right time. So I'll take Steele if I have to. Stripling as a two-start, I think I prefer, even with that at Boston. But I'll take Steele right behind Stripling if I'm looking at two starters.
All righty. And Aaron Civale, he's got actually just a one start schedule this week at Seattle. We'll see him pitch against the White Sox on Sunday. So that'll give us a little bit more information on him. Still, you know, fairly fresh off of the IL. And unfortunately, the only outings that he's had since coming back have both been against Detroit. So I don't know how much we should weight that, but he has performed really well, especially in the last start, 6 innings, 10 strikeouts, just 1 run allowed, 1 walk allowed. So how do you sort all that out?
He's in the middle of a possible pitch mix change. And I'm always more sympathetic to pitchers that have a good run of success after a pitch mix change. I say possible because he switched from a slider to a cutter, and Lord knows that's a really difficult one to figure out. But I think when you look at vertical movement, I think they're different. The cutter does drop a little bit less than a slider, which I think might be a good thing for him because he has that big curveball. So having a cutter instead of a slider might be the ticket for him. I just like the fact that there's some change there that corresponds well with what he's doing. At Seattle is a good matchup among the single starters. I think I'd rather have him than Waka. I think I might even have him than Soroka because I'm going to get some starts before I get anything from Soroka. I don't know how long I want to wait around, you know, especially for a guy that's been hurt a couple times coming back.
Yeah, and I mean, and you know that Civale, as long as he's effective, he's going to go fairly deep into the game as well. With, you know, Soroka, we don't know if he's just going to go 3-4 innings at a shot. So
he's like, he's like that Stripling guy too, where he's got a ton of pitches. So, you know, I like that for keeping the huge blowouts from happening.
And one thing, too, that I really liked about Civale a few years back was that he was not allowing very much hard contact. And that's something that he seemed to kind of lose the last couple of seasons. And that's been a plus for him the last few starts. So something I find encouraging there. Let's turn to the Mets rotation with Carlos Carrasco now on the IL with back spasms. So they'll need a replacement for at least a few weeks. I'm presuming it's David Peterson. Twitter seems to be presuming it's David Peterson. Peterson will almost certainly pitch on Saturday because the Mets have a doubleheader. But whoever comes out of that situation and inherits Carrasco's start the next time around gets the Rockies at Citi Field. So do you think just for that alone, We should add Peterson to this mix of one start streamers to consider.
Yeah, that's pretty tasty. I mean, I think he's fairly low stuff and low command, so I don't love him writ large, Peterson. But City Field is sneakily now one of the three or four most pitcher-friendly parks in the big leagues. You know, St. Louis, I have a big shrug emoji next to right now because it's been playing very differently than it has in the past. And then San Francisco just changed their entire setup. I mean, they changed the Triples Alley. They've changed a few things there. I'm not saying that City Field plays more pitcher friendly than San Francisco, but they might be closer than people think. So if you've got the sort of new San Francisco, then you play guys there. And I want to play Peterson at home. I'm a little bit more nervous about him on the road.
All right. Well, yeah, watch that over the weekend. See maybe what moves the Mets make after that doubleheader on Saturday. That should give us enough time going into Sunday Fab to make a more informed decision. And we'll just wind up with one more starting pitcher before we look at a few bullpen situations. Max Castillo appears to now be in the rotation for the Royals after coming over at the deadline from the Blue Jays. Some pretty good strikeout numbers in the minors. How do you like him against the Diamondbacks at home this week?
I like him. I think that's a decent matchup. He's home. The pitching plus model has some interesting things to say about him, which is that he throws his four seam and his changeup the most, but he gets his best stuff numbers on his breaking balls that he doesn't throw and his sinker. Now, he doesn't seem to be able to command those other pitches. So I don't know if he's a pitcher that's changing from one thing to another, that he used to be a sinker guy, is now a four seam guy or whatever it is. I find this intriguing in the model that he's seemingly throwing his worst pitches the most often, at least in terms of stuff. I don't trust Kansas City to tease that out of him. Especially, I think on the pitching front, they are a bottom half pitching development squad right now. So,
nope. Yeah,
it's kind of an interesting place to be where you're like, you know, could he be different? Could he be good? Yes. Do I trust the team that has turned out Brad Keller and Carlos Hernandez and Chris Bubich? And I'm sorry. that was rude.
We're getting more for our money here than just talking about Castillo, because these are all pitchers we've talked about in recent weeks.
Well, I don't trust any of them. So. I like, there's some things I like about Castillo more than any of those guys. I mean, for one, you've heard me say that I like pitchers with a lot of pitches. He seems to have a lot of pitches. I want to see what his pitch mix is going forward.
All right. So if nothing else, maybe a watchlist candidate with that start against the Diamondbacks. And let's just talk about a few bullpen situations. It's not been a particularly eventful week in that regard. But I think definitely the headline situation here is the Yankees. With Clay Holmes going on the IL, it may not be a long-term stay for him. So that definitely impacts my level of interest, but also I'm not really clear on who would get saves in the interim. My gut is that it's Scott Efros, partly because of just the skills that he's shown so far this year, but also he did get in that bottom of the ninth tie game situation against the Rays on Wednesday. So or I should say top of the ninth. So
didn't Chapman get a high leverage though too that he blew?
Yeah, same game. So he came in the 10th and then wound up vulturing a win out of that. Stupid. So yeah, it's kind of a crazy situation.
I just really quickly, like, I think it's crazy how different the Yankees are from a few weeks ago, even in my estimation. Before Michael Kim went down, I was like, oh, look at this bullpen. Oh, look at this team. It's a juggernaut. Now I'm like, do I want the Yankee closer? I think I'm going to bet on Chapman. I don't know why they seem to like him still. I'm going to bet on Chapman. That's my bet.
All right.
I don't really have much to add to that. I mean, the stuff is obviously, I think, still there to an extent. It's really just the combination of minus command and a little bit lesser stuff has been really rough on him.
Yeah. And what I was just going to say is he is not very available.
Yeah.
So the advice that I gave in the column, which is good, it was kind of a weasel way around really not knowing what to do here, but just saying that
Efros is the one who's available.
Yeah, Chapman's probably not even available, so throw a dollar at Efros and cross your fingers.
I like the next name you've got better than Efros.
All right, and that is Jason Adam. Yeah, sell me on Adam because he's gotten 3 out of the last 4 saves for the Rays. I do really like the skills profile a lot, but I just think it's so hard to predict whether there's going to be a consistent closer on that team and who it will be at any given time.
Well, I prefer to bet on a righty. That can go out the window if you have multiple lefties, as the Rays do. But I think generally, what I found when I looked at it a while back, and I haven't refreshed that data, is that teams prefer to have righty closers about twice as much as you'd expect, given the population of lefties in baseball. So I think they still do prefer righties, just because that means you're right on right more often, right? And there are more righty batters. So I think that's part of it. I think Fairbanks is working his way back. I think Pache has played well, but he's also really lost the zone sometimes. And he's a little bit more up and down. And with Fairbanks' injury, I think you go slow. I think Adam kind of percolates to the top there. Just as you said, 3 of the last 4 Tampa Bay saves, I would say something like that going forward. It means he's not going to get every single one. You can't wish for that anymore from most of these teams. So.
Right. Yeah. In the Rays especially. So, but, I guess I could at least get on board with saying that, I'd rather bid a little higher on him than either Efros or Chapman, just because there's a lack of certainty in that Yankee situation, and it's a short-term situation most likely. So, makes a lot of sense. Let's just go to one other situation. Probably not very many saves to go around for the Marlins right now. Tanner Scott's been getting those opportunities pretty consistently, but I was surprised to see Dylan Floro get a save against the Padres on Tuesday, because it didn't, to me, look like it was necessarily a workload issue for Scott. So is there anything there as far as you can tell?
Tanner Scott has plus-plus stuff and minus-minus command. Dylan Floro has meh stuff for a reliever and sometimes better command. I think given those profiles, I'm still going to bet on Scott.
All right.
But I can see why it happens. If you look leagues. At you look at Floro's, like I have this, this numbered location plus. If you look at Floro's last 3 starts, he has 118, 117, 127 by location plus. And I'm afraid to look at Tanner Scott's because they've been among the worst I've ever seen. Tanner Scott's location plus 79 in his last start, 84 a couple starts before the appearances before that, 83 before that, 75. So maybe they're just tired of that.
Yeah. All right. Well, then at least something to watch over the weekend.
I think I might go Adam Floro Efros because Holmes is coming back, and with Floro, if you guess right, you might get the guy who gets the most saves going forward.
Yeah. And I was going to say situation to watch over the weekend. Unfortunately, over the weekend, the Marlins are playing the Dodgers. So you just might have to make a bid just on faith.
Zero information between now and then.
Exactly. Well, Eno, thank you so much for stepping in for DVR on this episode. It's been a blast. You can follow Eno, and you probably already do, but in case you don't, you should follow Eno on Twitter at Eno Saris. You can follow me on Twitter at Al Melchior BB. And that's going to be a wrap for this Friday episode of the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Derek Van Riper will be back with us for this show next week. But until then, everybody have a great weekend. We'll be back with you on Tuesday.